That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome home. She left for Omaha, everybody.
I did. I am back from Omaha. Two things happened very highly related to this podcast. Although I feel like Brooke, my whole life is related to the podcast. Everywhere I go, I talk to people. They talk to me. No, not really. But I did see an old coworker from Buca di Beppo at Westroads Mall. My buddy Donnie, who I worked with 20 fucking years ago, has worked there for a long time. I was like in the purse section because I like to, you know, get myself fancy purses in Omaha. That's my bag, baby. Pun intended.
It's her kink.
And then I like look across the way and like there's Don, and I was just like, oh my God. And we like hugged in the middle of the aisle and like it was great. It was really, really nice.
You both still had red sauce on you somehow.
I know. Like, I was like, you smell like garlic. He was like, you smell like garlic. Yeah. It's just, what are you going to do? It's just part of it. You know, it's kind of like instead of getting a tattoo with somebody where you work with, you know, that you know your lifers for doing that, you just always have marinara stains all over your clothes for some reason.
100%. And, you know, everyone's been sending me articles that my old restaurant jobs, Cafe Salle Marie in Chicago, that it's not shuttering, but it's closing its doors after 40 years.
Yeah.
So obviously I'm still friends with James, our friend, who we worked together at Salle Marie. I'm still friends with a old coworker named Levy, and I'm like, man, we're like three people short of maybe being able to have a restaurant reunion on the show here, which we threatened to do a Bad Dog reunion.
Totally.
But we could maybe get a Cafe Salle Marie reunion going. James said he's going to try and hustle back to Chicago to eat there one last time before it closes at the end of the year.
Really? Seriously?
Yeah.
Aww,
isn't that cute?
Great. That's adorable. That's really nice. That's great. I wonder... God.
If anyone's curious, the Friendship Stand, okay, I worked there in 2003 and 2004, okay? So that's 20 years ago for me, too, that I'm still friends with former coworkers at restaurants. So the bond is real.
So good. Another thing that I did do in Omaha, now I'm going to shout out that there's this amazing liquor store that started in Lincoln, and now there's one in Omaha, and they take over old Toys R Us's because Toys R Us is like gone. And mm-hmm. So it's a whole liquor warehouse that they have. And there's these two liquor shops and they're huge and everything is there to the point where there's like a whole bourbon section. You'd be super impressed. It's crazy how the abundance of booze mm-hmm. they have there. But they absolutely had, because I couldn't find it here. I could not find the Eggo Appalachian Sipping Cream, which we talked about a few episodes back.
It's going to keep...
Brunch in a jar.
It's going to keep coming up. Don't worry.
In a jar, guys. I saw it. I was just walking through and I was like, there's no way I can't not just buy this right now.
What is the price point on it?
I didn't... honestly, I didn't even look because I was like, whatever it costs. I think, honestly... it was like $15, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Not bad. Not bad at all. You know, and it's it definitely comes in a mason jar. It definitely, like, I opened it up. I didn't even hear like a pop. I was like, I don't think it needs to be sealed, I guess, because of, you know, the 40 proof that it carries with it.
Got it.
tasted it, did a little taste test with it right away. Holy shit, is it strong. It's moon appalachian sipping cream. It's creamy moonshine. So got everybody else in my family around to do a little sip of it. Everybody was real hesitant, you know. I don't know why they would be.
Hey, do you think they'll try my hard gravy once I make it?
Hard gravy. That makes me horny when you say something like that, though, actually. So not bad. But then I was like, you know what? I'll just give it to my sister-in-law for her birthday, you know, because those two will like my brother and my sister-in-law will happily have at it. And, you know, we went out for brunch on Sunday for her birthday and ended up drinking a little bit of a day drinking. And toward the end of it, we were back at their place. And I was like, let's mix Fireball with Eggo Appalachian sipping cream and shoot it. And it wasn't bad, actually, at all. It kind of cut.
You need cream base for Fireball, because that's how they used to make what kind of oatmeal raisin cookie shots or whatever.
The oatmeal raisin cookies. Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever slippery nipple-y type, you know, which is more of a butterscotch with a Bailey's, like all that. But I was like, we're kind of onto something. I mean, this is I get to their level and toward the end I'm doing Fireball shots and drinking hard seltzers. Like what's a girl to do? You know what I mean?
When in Omaha. That's amazing.
Yeah. So it was a nice trip. It was great. I think we definitely got a few more followers with me getting flirted with, because apparently, according to my husband, I'm an Omaha 11.
Oh, fuck yeah. That's right, girl. Thanks for getting our view. Well, okay. So to segue into the, we are, if you have or have not noticed, we are really trying to make a run at having social media presence. We're ready to play the game. We realized we have so much great content, thanks to you guys, thanks to stuff that just gets inspired by riffing on the show. And we're like, it's all too fun and funny to not play the game and start making some reels and TikToks.
We can't just make it a secret club anymore, Brooke. We have to get out there.
So we are on TikTok. We have like 25 friends. It's not going great, but feel free to, like, we're still posting over there. We would love some more TikTok friends and to follow you if you're on TikTok. But I feel like we're doing so much better and growing our profile and our presence on Reels and Instagram. Andrea, for us, a little nobody doesn't try hard enough little podcast, you got 50,000 views.
Hey. What is it? You know, one day we're going to be like, 50,000 views. I don't know. It's a weird game, but it's fun.
It's a weird.
Like, I went to bed and I woke up and I was like, whoa.
It just starts snowballing is the thing. And you know, for us, like, we get excited if we get like 150 likes. So, of course, mm-hmm. It does feel awesome to be like, cool, we've got things to say that matter to a wider audience than the little one we've been, like we said, keeping secret.
Yes.
So
the
anyways,
best little audience.
The best in the little world, audience, by the way. The OG, the originals. You guys are family. But yeah, we're ready to get big enough so that people start trolling us and being mean. So we're ready. We're ready for it.
I think I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm ready.
Nice. Well, we're not going to do any headlines today because we have a really fun and long episode with our first guest back after the break. His name's Dan Adute. We love him. He's been a longtime comedy friend of mine. He's a foodie. He just wrote a book about his relationship with food and being a restaurateur and being a part owner in restaurants. He fucking hosted Raid the Fridge on Food Network. So he was also a Food Network show host, like he's on Cobra Kai, which everyone fucking loves. So that was really exciting. We felt like doing a little more than 25 minutes with Dan. So we've got a long episode coming up after this. So let's just jump into some server
submitted
stories. First one out of the gates. I like these two. They're all like real nice and sweet. So, hey, ladies, glad you're back at it. Been a fan of the pod since day one. Thank ya. Just listened to your episode on smoking in restaurants and have boots on the ground info for you from West Virginia. I moved to Southern West Virginia, real deal backcountry Appalachia.
Ooh,
I know. Speaking of
sipping cream,
sipping cream country, about 2 years ago from Northern California. Oh my God, that's another T-shirt idea. Sipping cream country. Hard gravy, sipping cream country. Okay, I'm writing it down. All right. So I'm glad to report that in the many, many restaurants I've visited all over the southern part of the state, I have never seen anyone smoking inside. Some places like bars have had signs up banning smoking, but it's been a non-issue everywhere I've been, thank God. Everyone thought my husband and I, both born and raised California folk, were nuts to move to West Virginia, but it has surprised me in many ways. The state is moving from resource extracting industries to tourism. There are many neat towns with wonderful restaurants, outdoor recreation activities, and niche food festivals. The Pawpaw Festival, anyone? I know of Pawpaw like ointment. I think it's made from a really weird fruit. Anyways, highly recommend visiting this gorgeous state and finding the hidden gems, especially the New River Gorge National Park. And that's from Izzy. I've heard of this park. Let's put it on a side work world tour list.
I've been to West Virginia and it is spectacular. We used to go and visit there. We would rent a couple times. We rented houses in the Appalachians, the Shenandoah Valley, if you will. Am I cool. doing if that's wrong? Correct me, please, Izzy, if I'm getting my facts incorrect. But for Thanksgiving with Brian's family.
Oh,
and it's
okay.
Just gorgeous. Just a lovely, lovely, beautiful state. And yeah, great. You know, I think that we have learned, and thank you for schooling us. You know, what we read sometimes is just like what the actual state rules are. And we don't, sometimes we need to break down county to city as well when it comes to some of these rules, you know?
Right. I offended some states who were like, fuck that. We don't smoke here. And I was just like, well, you could. It's just that every district and it's so, yeah, to not specify right. the fact that it's like your state has not come down on you, but individual counties and cities can make choices that work for them. So right. and most Absolutely. People have gotten on board. Anyways.
All right. Okay. Next story. Hey guys, listening to the most recent podcast and can confirm this summer has been way less busy than previous. I work in Chicago in a few different neighborhoods and have had friends that work in others. I have spent, it feels like the whole summer reassuring my coworkers that it's not just our spot, but everywhere that is slow. Everyone's been in a panic about it and thinks spots are going out of business. I keep reassuring them that no, it's literally everywhere. What with the shit weather and wildfire smoke. That's from Luke M. from Chicago. Yeah, there's been crazy smoke in Chicago. I mean, all over the Midwest because of wildfires in Canada. And it has really put a damper on that outdoor seating, especially in the last part of summer.
Yeah, just everything blowing down because, you know, I was just like, well, of course, like lower, basically like the southern southeast region, especially in Michigan, too. It's like my family and everyone in the Detroit area was getting nailed from fires coming down from Canada. So then you got the lake effect that'll blow that all over to Chicago. And just in general, everyone's feeling it. The inflation's real. Rent keeps going up. All the industries now are like, yeah. Fuck it, let's strike. And, you know, I will say, not that we're doing headlines today, but I keep seeing more and more restaurant workers from Waffle House and across the globe fully striking.
Walking out. And yeah, One Fair Wage just posted a video today that like in Atlanta, they were like, bye. Like, yeah.
You try and do this without us, okay? Have some AI make you waffles. Anyways. but it's there's something in the air, baby. America's really, really at, I think, more of a tipping point than I think we've ever even talked about in the past, where we were like, we're at a tipping point. And now 3 years later, I'm like, we are definitely at a tipping point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, we should have like a little side, you know, show called The Tipping Point, which it already exists, I think. But like, you like the tipping point we're talking about, which
well,
you guys
that's,
get.
That's the Malcolm Gladwell book. And we're not, you know, self-aggrandizing like he is. So anyways. but we feel it. We hope that everything can ramp up for, you know, sweater weather coming up and the holidays and that we can finish 2023 strong. But I know this doesn't make anyone feel better. This has been my worst year of my career, period. And this is after a pandemic. So it's real, everybody. It's very real. And just hang in there. Be creative. I'm going to start doing foot stuff online. So anyways.
Oh, All right. Well, and let's move on to our final story. Yeah, huh?
Yes. Okay. One last story. I love this so much. Short and sweet. Hey, Brooke and Andrea, just finished listening to the newest substitution related episode. Weirdest order I've received in the last few years from the bar side of the world. A lady wanted a deconstructed Grey Goose vodka and soda. She wanted separate glasses for each. A glass for vodka, a glass for ice, a glass for soda, and a glass to hold her citrus. Four glasses in total for her small two-top table that already had four other glasses and multiple plates all over it. Then, of course, she proceeded to ask to move to a larger table. Thankfully, we were at capacity with zero open tables, and she had to live with her own decisions. And that's from Roger.
Wow.
You're like, you want to go up here and be like, have you ever heard of a buffet? You might really like that.
Yeah. Also, just be like, can I get a Grey Goose on the rocks with a side of soda water and then just like put the citrus on the side? There's other ways to, oh, ice on the side.
Everything.
This is fucking nuts.
This is, I think it's OCD stuff. I don't really
know.
It
is for sure OCD stuff.
And I'm not dogging OCD, like it runs in my family. My boyfriend has it, you know, but he is not four cups, separate items, not touching each other while,
right.
You know.
OCD presents differently in every person.
It sure does. And like we said, we're not judging it, but it's also like, keep it out of the restaurant, for God's sake.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot. Well, those were some real sweet, quick server submitted stories. You guys, you know where to send them. Send them to, you know, sideworkpod@gmail.com. If you got some chestnuts, some inspiration, something you've been sitting on, you know what to do, right, Brooke?
Yep. Sideworkpod@gmail.com.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, you guys, and now we present our interview with Deanna Dude.
Guys, we are so excited to have our guest today. We've been trying to get him on for a minute and it's come together. Andrea and I would like to welcome to Sidework Podcast host, restaurateur, which is a hard word to say,
author,
actor, all the things. Welcome Deanna Dude, everybody.
Hooray!
Thank you.
Amazing.
I don't realize what I actually just learned last year that the word is not restaurateur.
No.
It's restaurateur.
Restaurateur.
Which, mm-hmm. No, it should have the word restaurant in it.
I know. Listen, there's a lot about this service industry that is just mind-boggling and doesn't make a lot of sense. Let's kick it off with talking about your own podcast, Green Eggs and Dan, the podcast. I went back and I was like, damn, you have been going hard since 2019.
I have been going hard in the paint. I feel like it's probably my favorite thing that I do. And, you know, that doesn't make me a lot of money. But
hey,
I just for love. Love. Yeah, I do it for the love. I love doing it. And I feel like everyone, it's, a, you know, it, for people who don't know, it's an interview show and I interview anyone, you know, actors, writers. We just had our first porn star.
I know. Nice.
Lexi Luna, and obviously our most downloaded episode ever.
Clearly. I was like, Andrea, we're sleeping on porn stars who worked, you know, in restaurants. So.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like if we have that, it'll be all pop-ups if we download that episode. You know what I mean? That's just me.
But the funny thing about that episode is that I started getting, like, press for that episode from, like, weird online publications like Flesh Mag.
Fleshlight Mag. They have their Fleshlight Mag.
So, but yeah, I interview anyone, and it's all based on a picture of the inside of their fridge.
Yes.
And then we just get into an interview about a conversation about their relationship to food, because everyone has a relationship to food, even if their relationship to food is, I don't have a relationship to food.
Totally.
See,
and cover porn stars got to eat too, apparently. So,
porn stars got to eat. Yeah. Well, I definitely got to eat.
They definitely have to eat. It takes a lot of energy to, you know, do that line of work. And we wanted to have you on the podcast specifically because you're kind of the other side of what you explore with food. You're kind of the more traditional, you know, where society loves to hear from chefs and celebrities and restaurant owners. And we represent the little guys, the little fellas, you know, the people who do the job, AKA wait tables, bus, bartend. Oh, have you had a bartender on yet?
No, I haven't had a bartender. I've had someone who has like some sort of cocktail podcast.
Nice.
So there was that. I think he's just a drunkard who has a microphone in his house.
Like, I just make cocktails all day by myself.
His name is Eric Andre. We love Eric. He was wandering through Whole Foods so hungover. My boyfriend and I were like afraid to say hello, just because even though I know Eric, I was like, he's not well right now.
OMG. Yeah.
I love him. But yeah, but I think what's fun is to have you on our podcast, because we usually have a kind of strict rule of like you have to have served, you know, be on the podcast, done a little time in the shit. And we know that you have not. And that is OK.
So I've been very worried about getting on this podcast because I think this might be a gotcha interview. I have a feeling.
No way.
I have a feeling it's a gotcha because I've definitely gone hard in the paint on some aspects of restaurant service.
Yes, you have.
As Brooke is aware. And I'm just now realizing I'm in the lion's den.
Yeah.
And I'm about to get tore up. So let's just get right into it.
Let's. Well, no, I was going to say you have some opinions about servers. How about give us a top three right now?
Oh my God. This is great.
Okay. So I have a couple strong opinions. I think the main one that you're going to probably take umbrage with is that I feel like servers get a special pass for when they're not being good at their jobs, or if they are sour, or if they're having, you know, they always get the benefit of the doubt of they must be having a bad day. And that's the only person in the world that we give that benefit to. Comedians who are doing a bad set, you're never like, oh, he must have just had a really awful day. If your bank teller is being, you know, snippy, you're never like, oh, you know, I'll just come back to Citibank tomorrow. I'm going to tip my bank teller 30% because she's probably just having a bad day. Yes, I tip my bank teller. So I just feel like the automatic reaction to getting bad service is extreme empathy. And maybe it's that should be with every other profession too. Or maybe it's that just like everyone else who puts on a face, Brooke, I'm sure you've done stand-up shows when you didn't want to do stand-up shows and you had awful things happen to you that day, but you put on a face and the show must go on. I feel like the show must go on is not really, I mean, the show goes on when a server is having a bad day, but it doesn't go on as gracefully as I think other people let it go on. Okay, give it to me.
I think it goes like the opposite way. First of all, I think like as a server, like you're dealing with like it's a public facing job and everybody's interacting with each other. And I think the customer having a shitty day really affects
that's
how things go too.
They are at the top of the food chain in this scenario always.
Yeah. I mean, I come from a place where like I leave my baggage at the door, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes like maybe you're not having a good day, but I just like push through it. I like feel like I'll always be there for you, like doing the best I can. I always think that it's also like if the chef is having a bad day, the servers are, the whole restaurant's having a fucking bad day too.
Right.
Like it, if like it just starts from the top and trickles down too. But I don't know. I feel like maybe there's like a free pass because you're just going to get up and leave and like never see that person again, probably in your life if you don't want to go back. You know what I mean? Like maybe that. And I think maybe we're taught as customers to be more empathetic because like the job is like you have to hustle. I don't know. This is loaded. There's a lot.
This is loaded. Yeah. Because I would say it's such a he said, she said, it's the dog and cat fight where it's like, man, customers will just leave you no money because they're in a mood and write something like, I hate your face, like where the tip should be. And the punching down that happens on servers, I would say there's also an expectation, which is hard to be a mind reader with certain customers. They're either mad at you that you checked in too much or they expected more from you. And you're like, and then they were fine through the whole service and you didn't know that they were... were making a voodoo doll of you in their purse at that moment and then like leave no tip. But it definitely goes both ways. And I think as service industry people, we have more empathy for other servers where we're going, oh man, I've been there. I was saying like they literally have to like punch my mom in the face for me to not at least leave 15% tip.
Totally. You know? Absolutely.
And I get mad. The thing is, as a server, because we just had an episode about burnout. And you know when you've gotten the server or the bartender who is so burned out from their job and they have brought their shit fucking stank attitude and they have just decided, I'm going to see how mean I can be and still get tipped. Where I've been waited on by those people. And those people suck.
Yeah. I mean... Look, one of probably my favorite restaurant in LA that I go to most often, the service is abysmal. And it's like almost part of the thing. And I'm like,
totally.
And it makes you mad to go.
Yeah. And they're nice to me because I'm friends with the owner.
Right.
That's not an excuse. And it's like, I've even told the owner, I'm like, dude, I'll send people to your restaurant. And then they're like, the food was great, but why is everyone like in an awful, awful mood all the time? And I don't know. I mean, I have a solution to the am I getting overserved or underserved dilemma, because it is a dance and it is tough to know what the person wants. If they want, you know, it's almost like double Dutch, like to know like when to jump in and when not to. And it is hard to mind read like that. That's why I am always a fan of what I call the Korean button. The Korean button.
Oh, sure.
The Korean button is the best thing ever invented. It is in every Korean barbecue place. There's mm-hmm. a button on the table and you press it when you want someone to come.
It's a little doorbell for service. It's a service bell.
They leave you. I think it's a win-win.
Mm-hmm. We brought this into a Buca di Beppo as a long running joke, and we had it out on the table for a video, and I hit this and I was like, oh my god, put it away. I hope no one really thought that was serious.
My god, amazing.
Nobody heard it, but I that place is a cavern. So I do love a Korean like ding dong, the bell, the table bell, I think is great. Because it's true. It's like minimal service. It's almost like a, you know, it's almost like a European feel of like dining too. You're just kind of like where you have to be like, if you need something, tell me, but don't be like, you know, don't expect people to be mind readers, right?
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
that's one thing. When you talk about this restaurant that you go to in LA that like everybody has like the same shit attitude, that's hive mind, baby. Like that's just accepted behavior across the board. Mm-hmm. Like that's just what they've all come to like think that their job's about, which is dumb in my opinion, because there's also bad servers out there. I'm not gonna lie,
like LA I defend loves the service a bad industry server.
A lot, but there are people who should not be doing the job, you know.
Yes. I agree. By the way, I want to also preface with, I can't remember the last time I left less than a 20% tip.
Of course. Right.
I mean, even if I get awful service, I don't know that I would ever go under like, let's call it 17, 15%. Like, I can't. Right. I don't know when the last time is that I was so angry.
Right.
And I mean, it must have been something awful that happened, but I can't. I don't know. That's never really.
I appreciate your opinion that you're like, this was a bitter 20% tip that I left because, you know, here I am giving them benefit of the doubt and this is the system we've created and I don't want to be that asshole who doesn't tip. But you get into your headspace where you're like, oh, we just like spent so much money and to appropriately tip for the service that the check reflects. You're like, God, I can't believe they just got to pocket like $30 from me for being a shit. You know, a little fucking shit to me. And that,
By the way, you do it. I'm probably going to lose you guys here, though. I'm probably going to lose you guys.
Oh,
here.
Okay.
Okay. If I go to a restaurant and I have to stand in a line and then I have to get to the person and I have to give them my order and then I have to wait and I have to take my food and I have to bring my food to the table and then I have to bust my stuff. And then when you flip your little iPad over and it gives me the suggested tip of do I want to give 20, 22, or 25%? Go fuck yourself.
Fuck yourself. No,
sorry.
It's called tip exhaustion. Tip exhaustion.
Tip exhaustion. We've hit a burnout phase with that too. And like for us as servers, you're like, we at least know on that side, especially because they really par down. Usually it's like one person working register, one person running food, one person making drinks. I think all of those folks are, they're usually salaried in that situation. And so any tip you give is additional money toward them. And I kind of look at it the way I would throw a few bucks for getting a drink. I do not like to wait in a line, not get served, and do all the work myself and go full, you know, just so. And that's a really confusing, we've talked about the annoyance of these kind of restaurants. And that used to freak me out too, where you're like, it's the inverse of the dining experience where you're waiting on the front end, but then you can just get up and go, which was really weird versus like, we're waiting for the check. But you'd been served, probably sat and got everything done quickly. But yeah, those are strange scenarios. And we argue all the time over like what is tip worthy and what is not and how the service model has changed. And most of it changes to specifically hurt and cheap out on servers.
Right. Because it's a streamlined way to like save money ultimately when people are coming and doing counter service.
So did you hear this? Cafe Birdie in Highland Park just up and canned their entire staff with no warning. They were given, these are like veterans who stayed with them since they opened. And we're like, hey, everyone, you get like 2 days off because we're going to do a little, we're just going to do a little renovating. And then sent everyone a cryptic email saying your position no longer exists. And we've decided to move the restaurant into like a new flow of service. Meaning, I think they're probably going to do counter service, something like that. But to just to make more money and to keep more money in their own pockets, they canned 9 like veteran restaurant workers who had stayed with them through the whole pandemic. And this is what restaurants are doing. They're like, hey, what's the new model where we can put more money in our pockets and like not have servers?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. So unfortunate because, okay, so I think we've spent a lot of times, or I've spent a lot of times bashing bad service, but now I think would be a good time to commend good service, which,
of course,
you know, the way that I liken it is like, you know how you have those comedians who have like really amazing stage presence and fine jokes, but you still love them? Like, you know, I think that that's the same. The service is the stage presence. The food can't usually speak on its own. It needs to have that stage presence for the joke to actually work, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that it's the unfortunate part of the Uberification and Postmateification where we're just like, well, I just want to eat my food and I don't really care about, you know, what the dance around it or the, you know, the, what do you want to call it? I mean, the, like going to a restaurant to me is like going to a play.
Yeah, it's a show.
It's a social show.
Yeah, it's a beautiful,
it's
fun thing.
It's a social
thing.
Contract, like, you know?
Everybody wants to have a good time. I mean, yes, some people walking in, they're like, I think some people are just like destined to have a shitty time every time they go out. And that's, they need to dig deep into themselves to figure out why that is. But like, you know, for the most part, it's like, if I'm going to go out and spend my money and have fun, and I'm huge on this, I love going to new restaurants. I'm like, I'm the fucking girl where people are like, what's the hot new restaurant? I'm like, have you heard of this place and this place? Like, I love it. It's a whole scene for me. And I want to be dined. I want to be wowed. I want to have a great time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny. I've lately I've gone to a couple restaurants that are like, just like almost kitschy service. And I think it's so much fun. Like, you know, I'm down with a lot of people shit on Salt Bae and I get it. but the thing that I love is like bringing fanfare to restaurants, like the Benihana-ization of restaurants.
Oh, you absolutely.
Know, it's fun. And it's like, also you see it in upscale settings now too. Like at the restaurant La Dolce Vita in LA, it's like you feel like you're in Sinatra's, you know, like you feel like you just walked into like a Sinatra party and, you know, the servers are all wearing the white tuxedo and it's kind of, yeah. you know, or Teresi yeah. in New York or Carbone or those restaurants, like all those that like go over the top with service. It's like so much fun.
Well, and especially if you work and have like a good, you know, work ethic from top down where you make every person who works in the restaurant feel valued. It's like you want to reflect that you like your job and you like the place you work at. And it's like, because, you know, Dan has, you know, seen our pitch for front of house versus back of house or like in mm-hmm. the weeds. And we're talking about like as a customer, you walk in and if you're feeling the good vibe, it can be really like contagious. And maybe that person who's determined to have a bad time for the first time ever doesn't, because everyone is kind of like, come on, get in the spirit of it or whatever. But you can just tell that when people really like their serving job, and when people are being treated fairly, make good money, and have like coworkers who respect them, that like that's the dream come true.
Yeah.
Well, Deanne, did you know that theme restaurants are on the rise again?
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like really fun happening. Ones.
And I think it's because like we all need more escapism, right? So I think from whether you're a customer or like getting a job at a place like a themed tiki bar or, you know, there's a Karen's restaurant chain that opened up in Australia, you know, like I think it's a form of escapism on both ends, like as an employee, as a customer, you know, like maybe it is a thing where when I talked about dropping your baggage at the door, if I get to like put on a fucking like fun uniform that everybody else is wearing and like have a raucous time with like customers for a 4-hour dinner shift, like, come on. And then everybody wins. That's how I feel about it.
I just kind of had a light bulb go off too, where like I've never had a job where I got to kind of like check out and leave Brooke at the door, and like inhabiting a character would be so much easier to maybe not take it all personally, to be like, well, whoever this person is who's wearing this tuxedo and, you know, has all this like extra garb on, like she doesn't care. She's here to have a good time. And I think it's almost like to me that I'm like, wow, that's like having some extra armor, or like people who do comedy who just do characters and hide behind the character. I'm like, that probably would have been way more fun. And I wouldn't have taken everything so personally.
I mean, look, I talk about it. We all know I worked at Buca di Beppo. Everybody fucking knows that. He's been listening to this restaurant forever. But like back in the day when they first opened and menus were on the wall and everything was huge, it was like you'd go to a circus to eat for dinner. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like people expected a certain thing. So and I got to be like a participant in that. So that's why I thought that place was so fun, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's just like you need to have zero cynicism to do that, which is tough to do when you're a server because you're dealing with a lot of shit, right?
I think the most cynical people stay in their dive bars and would never go near, you know, they're not going to be flipping eggs and throwing shrimp into your face. You don't want a server with burnout, you know, manning a grill and throwing things. People are going to get hurt.
Yeah. There's a new teppanyaki place that's opening up in downtown LA that's got like a French influence to it. It looks absolutely beautiful. It's in a hotel. Like, I can't wait to go. I'm like, okay, bring on.
Maybe we can
like uplifted like a teppanyaki fusion. Let's see what happens. You know?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That sounds very fun. I mean,
we should all
it's
go.
Funny because if you think about like most Japanese cuisine is. Like you feel like you're in a theme restaurant, like you're being performed for, right? Like,
yes,
they can make the ramen in the back. They can make the sushi in the back and bring it out. They could do the yakitori in the grill in the back. But no, they always want it front and center. They want mm-hmm. you to see what's going on. It's a fun show. You're seeing the big cauldrons of the ramen. You're seeing the bento-chan coals and the smoke, and you're seeing the sushi being made in front of you. And it's like, it adds so much fun to the experience.
It's crackling with personality, you know?
That's right. I'm comparing Japanese restaurants to what's it called? To medieval times.
To medieval
times. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I get the same feels for sure.
I've never been to medieval times, by the way, and that's like a huge chink in my armor. Like, I really.
I've also, pun intended.
Using an armor, for sure.
I also have never been.
I really want to go. I love a turkey leg.
I mean, there's one in Anaheim. We should go next, you know?
It's really keto friendly. Town. Really keto friendly. Okay, so I have a question to pose to you, Dan. If you had to choose a type of restaurant where you would be a server at, where do you see yourself being able to flourish or tolerate?
Wow.
That job.
That's a great question.
Well, yeah, because we talked about, for people who are considering getting into the service industry, that it's okay to have your list of absolutely nots, you know, it's completely fine to just have to know your boundaries of where you will and won't work.
Right. Okay. I think I'd be great at like an annoying hipster wine bar. And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Okay. I feel like I have a very good knowledge of wines. And I also feel like I am very non-pretentious when it comes to wine. And cool. I feel like most of those places that you go to, there are people with mediocre knowledge of wine who are such dicks about it. And they're like, they make people feel really like they make them feel like idiots for asking very normal questions. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I think I would take the pretension out of the wine. I'd have a fun time. I'd create a fun convivial mood.
Love that.
You know, that's I've
definitely
always
have to know how to work a panini maker, you know.
Yeah, work your fucking panini maker and pour your orange wines from Georgia and, you know, make up some bullshit about the clay pots they were in and you're done. And you're good.
Maybe it's the kind of place you're like, we just give you like an extra half to 1 ounce pour for that $25, you know, glass that you just we give you a little extra.
Yeah, yeah. I would be the guy. Yeah, exactly. When it gets to the end and it's just sediment and you're like, you know what? I'll just give you the rest. And they think they're doing you a favor.
You can have the floaters.
Like, cool.
You're welcome.
I feel like I actually like having a wine bar is my dream.
Nice.
Job. I would love wine bar.
Because I think it's more of having a little bit more of that Napa Valley attitude, like Northern California, where everyone's like, whatever, it's wine. Yeah. You want to come in and taste it? I'm day drunk always, you know, wearing a cowboy hat. Like, come on in.
I think it's like beauty and simplicity, too. I mean, obviously complexity with speaking of wine, but it's just like the simple act of just like just having wine, a few bites, you know, like, I don't know, maybe 20 seats tops, you know, that sounds fantastic to me.
Yeah. That is another vibe where you're like, this is what I want tonight. I don't want the whole show. Where a wine bar with small bites is that perfect happy medium where you don't have to drop a ton of money, even though it can kind of sneak up depending how much wine you have. But you're like, this is so hands off and relaxing, but like everything's good. And it's again, that's when it's okay to kind of like lift your finger and get it, you know, try and get the attention of the bartender, you know, just
pet peeve on the getting attention of the bartender, if I may. Tell me if I'm wrong here. I'm going back into the lion's den. But if I say, let's say the bartender is turned away, like let's say 45 degrees to the side, and I say, excuse me, can I get another glass, please? And they don't say anything. And then I have to, and then it's again, I say, oh, I'm sorry, excuse me, can I get, I heard you. Okay. I just want like a little bit of a nod. Just give me a head nod. Give me a thumb.
It's all it takes.
You know, just like a.
I'm with you.
Blow your nose.
If you do have to say it a second time, they should just be like, absolutely, I heard you the first time. Thanks for reminding me or something, you know?
That sounded like that had an attitude behind it, Andrea. Absolutely. I heard you literally 10 seconds ago.
Thanks for reminding me. Thanks. I don't need a reminder. Thanks, Mom. Thanks for telling me again.
Should I go to my room?
Oh my God. Yeah, but I'm with you, Brooke. Like, we need to bring a little more of the buttery Chardonnay attitude.
Like, yes.
Give mama her buttery shard. We need that fun attitude. Like the wine express, like it's wine o'clock, like the dumb signs, like the expressions.
God, like, I want to make that.
I love that.
We need that attitude more with like the natural wines or like whatever you want to call the non-interventionalist wine movement.
Well,
you should just call it Kendall Jackson Wine Cellar is what you should call it.
I'm going to go on record. I don't like natural wines. I don't like the funk. I don't like kombucha. I'm having a moment where I'm like, I'm guaranteed I'm not going to like this fucking wine and it's going to give me an allergic reaction.
It's too hoppy.
I agree with you. I think 90% of natural wine is complete garbage and it's being emperor's new clothes to all of us.
Yeah.
And it's bullshit. And I think that there's so many great wines there that the problem is it's all or nothing now. It's like either everything is kombucha or everything is like old school chemical shit wine.
Right.
And I think there needs to be the happy medium in the middle. Like there's a lot of great traditional winemakers who make wine naturally that they don't fucking have the cool little label on the front of someone doing spray paint of Che Guevara. Like, I don't know. I just feel like there's a happy medium. I got into a fight with Eric Andre on my podcast about
this.
He was like, you just don't get it. I was like, fuck face. I do get it. Like it all tastes like kombucha.
Right. And it's okay. Cause like you might also like hard seltzers and guess who done like a hard seltzer? This girl, it's a palate and there is a war between palates right now. It is a civil war of palates that's happening in the wine industry because I feel pushed out and put upon.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, that's the sad thing is that every good new restaurant is probably going to have a very natural wine forward wine list. And I think that it's wrong. I don't think that that's the way it should be.
Offer one or two. Have an orange. Okay, fine.
This is not just an American thing. This is in fucking Paris at like the best restaurants. Ooh. They're all like little natural wine, natty wine hubs. And I don't know. I think the pendulum is going to land somewhere in the middle eventually. That's my crusade. Also, the fact that you can, in any dive bar in America, you can find the best beers that are made in the world. You'll have, you know, micro brews that are fucking cool, that are made in some, you know, cool little town in Maine that are amazing. You will have the best you can find the best top shelf liquor, even in a dive bar. They'll have it. You'll have to pay extra for it, but it'll be there. You can never get just a halfway decent glass of wine in a dive bar.
Yeah, I think some dive bars are doing better, like newer ones, and they pick and they choose and they have like an exclusive, like a really nice red or really nice white, whether they call it house or do a rotation. I have been noticing that, but I do think that it is like, I don't know, maybe it's just like, this place isn't for you. Maybe you should go someplace else. I don't know. Like, I agree. I think there needs to be a better choice.
But they'll say that and then they'll also have like Blue Label on their fucking dive bar. Like if you want, we don't do that fucking wine bullshit, but can I interest you in a Goes beer from Austria, from the Highlands?
For sure. I'm like, be like, for some reason you have like Frangelico back there, you know?
So we also wanted to talk to you. We know that Raid the Fridge is kind of hanging in the balance. Season 2, what's going on?
It's canceled. But I know. It was a pretty fun show. It was on the Food Network. Now it's on it lives in infamy on Discovery Plus. Mm-hmm. So thankfully Zaslav is still making money off of it.
That dick.
I mean, I love the concept of Raid the Fridge and that, like, you know, you have like chefs that go in and they get like a mystery fridge of like someone else's fridge and they have to work with the ingredients to make like however many courses, right?
Yeah. That's basically it. It was like a bootleg Iron Chef, which was very fun.
Well, I love a quick fire challenge, like for me personally at home. So that premise is super appealing. I'm the kind of person that, like, I look in my fridge all the time and I'm like, what kind of incredible meal can I, you know, make at any given time? So I'm a big fan of this idea.
I mean, look, what I learned from that experience was as long as you put cut up chives and sesame seeds on top of anything, it's going to look fantastic.
some sort of drizzled crema. Yeah, I know.
Just chiffonade something. And that's
anything. You could chiffonade the paper that's around a straw and put it on top. and it'll look great.
Ooh, appealing to the eye.
Very nice. Yeah. I have to say, it seems like you were interviewing everyone in your podcast about what's in their fridge. And did you take that platform to spin it into what if we made chefs compete? Because you saw some pretty weird refrigerators over the last 4 years. You've seen some dark and mysterious, sad places inside some people's, you know, home refrigerators.
I've seen some awful fridges, guys. I don't want to, I'd rather not talk about it on this podcast. Okay. I'm still doing ayahuasca to try to get over it.
Purge. You got to purge that demon.
Yep. Take the trauma, mother.
But no, funny enough, it wasn't my idea. It was their idea and they were looking for a host. And one of the Food Network execs like is a fan of my podcast. And he's like, wait, there's this guy who does fridges. So it just kind of worked out.
That's incredible. I wish I could
say it was my idea from the top, but, actually, you know
they're
what?
Like, get fridge guy to come in and do it.
You know what? Let's edit out the last 15 seconds. Yeah. It was my idea. Okay. When Dana Dude has an idea, he never lets it go until he sees it on TV.
That's right. Until Zaslav takes all my money. I'm not happy.
Hey, you know, it's just the Zaz being the Zaz.
Was there like a super crazy ingredient on the show that you know that was like a real like, oh, this really threw me for a loop as a chef, as a professional?
I mean, I feel like we definitely jumped the shark on like episode 2 of like ideas to do. Like there was like a mystery fridges that in the last round where like you didn't know what you had no idea. Like one fridge was like wrapped in aluminum foil and then one was like wrapped in plastic wrap and you had no idea what it meant. And then you open the fridge and it's like all the ingredients are either wrapped in aluminum foil or wrapped in plastic wrap in the other one.
You're like, what does an agoraphobic have in their fridge? Like,
you're all like, are we positive this isn't like fucking Jeffrey Dahmer's fridge? Why is everything...
Yeah, it looked like Dexter's fridge. And now these poor chefs who like went to culinary school are like frantically just trying to cut like
foil and ceramic.
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know if this is the best use of our chefs, but here we go. Here we are.
Is it amazing. So like what for you? I mean, because I think since obviously we're very food centric and service industry, I feel like, you know, just kind of like crossing that bridge to being like, oh my God, I'm doing something with the Food Network. Has to feel like a aha, like you ticked off a big, you know,
yes, box 100%. Your goals. 100 million percent. Because, you know, we were all fans of the Food Network growing up and it's like always been a dream to be on the Food Network. I mean, just being a part of that ecosystem was just such a flex to be able to say I host a show on the Food Network.
Absolutely.
And then people are like, really, where can I see it? And I'm like, well, it's technically canceled now, but it's on Discovery Plus. I mean, very, very fun. Even though like, I don't know, I don't really watch the Food Network. It's like the Food Network started.
I don't anymore.
It's kind of like SNL. It's like no one's really watching SNL anymore. But like if it wasn't for SNL, you wouldn't have a lot of amazing, you know, sketch shows and whatnot.
You wouldn't have Billy Madison. Duh.
You wouldn't have Billy Madison. I mean, so it's like, you know, you wouldn't have I Think You Can Leave. You think you wouldn't have a lot of these great sketch shows that, you know, but they started the mold. So I feel like the same way about the Food Network. It's like, yes, I think maybe the baton has been, you know, passed on to like the Netflixes, you know, the Is It Cake and that stuff. But I also feel like the Food Network has changed. Like I loved just the straight cooking show where someone's teaching you how to cook, but I get that doesn't get the numbers of like, you know, welcome back to Kitchen Genocide Death Battle Royale.
Oh right. No, so totally. Like, I feel like the Food Network's gone like how MTV's gone. You know what I mean?
Right,
it's just
right.
It's, yeah, for sure. Talk to us about your restaurant that you are involved in.
The co-owner. Do you have a percentage in it?
I have a percentage stake. It's called Estella. It's in New York City. And it was honestly I had a couple of friends who were starting this little tiny restaurant and they needed a little bit of money and a bunch of us got together and it ended up becoming this like breakaway hit of a restaurant because like the Obamas went and ate there.
Nice.
And then it got on like San Pellegrino's like 50 best of the world, which is insane. And it's like a tiny little restaurant like on the second floor of like a random block in Manhattan.
Yeah, is it Soho area or is it Lower East Side where or is it West Village?
It's like on Houston between Mulberry and Mott, so it's like Nolita-ish. Okay. Everyone loves Estella. It's a great restaurant. It's very expensive. Just get ready if you're going there. It's perfect. You know, every time I have like someone taking me out, like a work, someone taking me out for lunch or dinner, that's like an industry, like an agent or some shit, I'm like, let's go to Estella. So it's really good. It's like, you know, it's a parent restaurant. Take your parents, have them pay for you, and you'll love it. Yeah.
What do you think of the servers there?
I have a little bit of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. I don't know if you're aware with this principle, but if you're being observed, you're gonna change the way you are, right? And so I feel like they know that I'm a partner, so I don't think I have an objective, you know, view of what the service is actually like. But it seems pretty. It seems like it could be way more pretentious than it actually is, which I
I was looking at the menu.
I'm looking at the menu right now.
And I said to Andrea, I was like, I might pack it up in LA, move to New York and see if I can get a serving job there. Because I bet you make bank. Those are going to be some tall tabs. Yeah.
Oh, those dishes are tiny. The ones that you're looking at, by the way.
So you got to eat a bunch of them.
It's all meant to share. Yeah.
$20 cocktails. I was like, girl. That's gonna be some nice tips going home at the end of the night.
And they do the old have you dined with us before? Okay, well, here's what we recommend. Each person for appetizer, 5 to 9 dishes. For entree, 13 to 17 dishes. And for your dessert, you're probably going to want, depending on how hungry you are, somewhere between 75 and 124 dishes.
Do we have any allergies tonight? Because we cannot accommodate a one.
Yeah. Not a single one. We would just like to shame you publicly, though. So who has an allergy?
I don't know. The Wagyu steak with tagliatelle and cabbage looks great. I think cabbage is a very underutilized vegetable, and I'm very happy that it's becoming much more worked with and roasted, and that's just me.
I mean, look, I will say this. It's the closest you're going to get to the new wave Parisian bistro food that's happening now. I think Estella is the closest you'll get. So just think about you saving money on that transatlantic flight and putting it into the ricotta dumplings.
Very cool. Amazing. I mean, gosh, you should really be like a man of the people one day. And like one time when you go, you're like, I'm going to stage here. I'm that cool owner, you know, who just jumps on the line.
Yeah.
Like,
you could make the rounds. How's your meal? How's everything going tonight? Are you having a nice time? Kiss some babies, if they're allowed in your restaurant, you know.
Hell no. That's so funny. Yeah, I'm going to be a part of a new restaurant in LA that is from that fucking owner that has my favorite restaurant that I hate the service at. And I told him that absolutely I need to be a part of the service hiring that happens, because he's not good at doing that.
I can see the montage now.
Oh my God, I know, process. Right?
The antics. It'll be kind of like Chorus Line, you know?
Right.
I love this. One other thing I wanted to just compliment about your podcast is Andrea and I do something like this too, where you've got your history bites, where you go deep on either the origin of a food. And we have little supplementary episodes called add-ons, which we go deep on, like, you know, what is where did the wine key come from? And
fun.
Yeah, you do all these really fun deep dives. And I think that's so fun. Maybe we could do like a fun, nerdy collab. I mean, I get really nerdy about history and food and service and restaurants, all that stuff.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with food history. There's so many little nuggets of stuff that no one knows about. Like, everyone knows about world history, but food history, no one knows anything. And it's something that we eat, you know, 3-4 times a day. And no one knows about where it comes from. I mean, there are such fun ones. Like, I'm trying to think of a great one that's like a quick one. Like, the word, you know, Roman soldiers used to be paid part of their salary was in salt.
Worth your weight in salt.
Yeah, worth your weight in salt came from that. And also, so did the word salary, which starts with S-A-L, because salt was part of their payment. I know, mind blown. Like, little things like that.
I love shit like this.
I love it. So, yeah, I mean, I'm such a history, like a food history nerd. It's like my favorite thing. So, well, I love that you guys are nodding to that. Where did the wine key come from?
So, Andrew, I mean, it was a corkscrew. Mm-hmm. It was always a corkscrew, right? And then the man who invented the one with the hinge.
Yeah, it in was general, just the worm always.
The
yeah.
worm, and so then he added the hinge so you could get more leverage. Well, his last name was Weinke. So everyone thought it was called, they were mispronouncing his last name and started calling it a wine key. And it's just a weird coincidence that his last name was Weinke. And then everyone got it wrong. And so now we call it a wine key.
Like, he just called it like the bartender's friend or the server's friend. And, you know, that's what he had claimed it to be. But yeah.
Hilarious. Mm-hmm. It's funny. That reminds me of this is a fun Persian food history thing. So the word for popcorn in Farsi is chosefil, which literally means elephant's fart. Which is a very weird thing. You're like, why the fuck is it called elephant's fart? And the reason is because the only popcorn they were getting in Iran in like the early 20th century was from this British company called Chesterfield. And Persians can't pronounce Chesterfield, so they say Chosefil. And Chosefil means elephant's fart.
That's great.
So funny.
Wow. Chosefil.
That's so funny. Good pronunciation.
Thank you. Yep, I hang out with your kind. anyways, Dan, thank you so much. I want to do more nerding out soon.
Yeah, please.
I'll hit you up with some more ideas, man.
I mean, I just got a new fridge and I would show it off anytime. I'm just going to say
Andrea's a great guest. Andrea is a food fucking nerd.
Ooh. I'd like to see, send me a picture of the fridge. We'll vet it. We have a very rigorous vetting process of fridges.
I just realized the other day, like, it's always like when I clean my fridge out, the question is like, how many jars of cornichons are in my fridge? Like, I feel like it's something that you just overbuy. When I cleaned out the fridge last time, there were 3 jars that I had to marry together. And that was just since like Christmas of last. And I was like, well, this bitch loves she likes a tart little cornichon, you know, but I mean,
so does this bitch. I think who doesn't? Mustard, I feel
so
like
great
is the most. I feel, hold on, before, hold on.
Yeah, that's a mustard point to make.
Yep.
Before you tell me how great it was talking to me. Before we drop the check, mustard seems to be the most like, I didn't know that I had any, so I'm going to buy more that I've seen in fridges. Everyone has 4 mustards.
We have like 6 different kinds of mustard for sure. And definitely like 10 different kinds of hot sauce.
My boyfriend does not have good mustard recall. I think that's what we're going to phrase this. Bad mustard recall, you know? So he just keeps buying mustard and more mustard. And there's a real fear that we might run out because he's that guy.
I got the other day, we had like a French's spicy brown, but then I bought some Gouldens and my husband was like, we have brown mustard. I'm like, yeah, but we don't have Gouldens. Like, it's a different feel.
It's a different feel for sure.
And
it's a different mouthfeel.
I will say, yeah, the reason why like we're so into food too, the gateway was serving. The gateway was working at restaurants, you know?
Yeah.
So like that's a good positive. I think something we can all agree on, that it's a gateway and a road down to like loving food. And if you want to keep it in, you know, your rotation for the rest of your life. But I think you learn to appreciate like food and, you know, where it comes from when you're in the service industry. At least I would hope so.
100%. And it's funny, like people like the 3 of us, who I imagine spend an outsized amount of our income on food. Like whenever I get dinged for it by buddies of mine or relatives of mine, I'm always like, you know, I go back to that thing of like people saying that experiences are more valuable than, you know, material things, right? Mm-hmm. And like we were saying before, like there's something about the experience of going to a restaurant, the way that we do it, where we really treat it like this is going to be a fun night out. And I think you can't get that without great service. And so, you know, like to me, it's money well spent. It's like my therapy. It's it keeps me buoyant, my happiness buoyant.
I like shoes. So anyway. hey guys, you can also check out Dan's book that just dropped, Undercooked: How I Let Food Become My Life Navigator and How Maybe That's a Dumb Way to Live.
Right. After saying like I restaurants are my therapy.
And then yeah, yep. Sorry. That was your got moment there. See, we were you got yourself, dude. But guys, check out Dan Adut. He's on the TVs, he's on the airwaves. He's
right. I'm on the Instagram.
On the grams.
At Stand Up Dan on the Instagram, on Twitter, on X, on Threads.
Yeah, he's on the Cobra Kai for all the kids listening out there, you know.
I'm on the Cobra Kai, yeah, for the kids. I play Anoush on Cobra Kai. But yeah, thank you for having me. This is so much fun. It's very nice to come into the lion's den and leave slightly bruised, but better for it.
Better for it. That's all we try and do with this podcast is leave people more informed and to think harder about dining.
Yes. Next experiment will be us all dining out together and see how that goes down.
I need
a fucking job if I'm going to go out to eat with you too. So
we're going to medieval times. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll be fine.
Awesome.
Perfect. Andrea, you know what we say at the end of each episode? Godspeed.
Oh, and good tips.
All right. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.